Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini, represented by CLNS Media. Today on the show, Dieter Kurtenbach is here.
Hi.
We're in the dog days of the NBA calendar. This podcast could get very tangential very quickly.
It's never happened with us, Sam.
Never once. No. We're going to talk about the, you know, what LeBron dubbed the Rich Paul rules. I've been spending the last like 24 hours of my life reporting out that stuff, talking to like 20 agents, mm-hmm. and, you know, learning more about how this is going. Kevin Durant spoke out through Chris Haynes. Chris Haynes went over and sounds like just had the best day with Kevin Durant, to be honest.
Just hanging out with my friend Kev.
I love that. Like, seriously, Chris Haynes too. Like, Chris Haynes is one of the nicest people I've met, like, in this industry. That's great. I love that he just went over to Kevin Durant's house here in L.A. and hung out. We're going to talk about, I don't know, we might talk a little bit about mental health issues in the NBA and how the NBA is working to combat those. Might talk a little bit about Kemba Walker being the only, like, superstar playing for Team USA in
the tournament.
In the tournament that nobody cares about. Then maybe we'll talk about like feral hogs. Maybe we'll talk about like some other ridiculousness. I'm pretty sick, sort of. I'm finally getting over it. You might be able to tell in my voice. But Dieter, how are you doing? How is life on your end?
The Giants have lost 4 straight games. They are now closer to last place in the National League West than they are a wild card spot. This is where my life is. These are the things I have to care about. Very happy that Kevin Durant said something today of all days, because otherwise, oh boy, I was going to have to come up with something else to write the column on, and
would
have been rough.
Have you written the "this is dumb, they should have sold at the deadline" column yet?
Here's the thing. I don't necessarily have a problem with the Giants buying in to kind of their own brand at the juncture of the trading deadline. Like, if you're not going to get an above and beyond offer, like, I'm totally fine with saying, hey, nothing we really do here is going to set us up for, you know, decades to come, or at least 5 years to come. We're just getting parts. Let's see if we can make a run at it. We trust you. We're going to put a little bit of trust in you guys because you've done so much over the last month. And the Giants were the best team in baseball in July. And what the Giants players have done with that trust is shit all over it by losing 4 straight games, including 3 to the Nationals, a team directly in front of them in the wild card standings. Like, you obviously in prior years, this would be the circumstance where then the Giants go, okay, well, now we know what you actually are. Let's put Madison Bumgarner on waivers and try to trade him that way. But there was only one trade deadline this year, and so they just got to ride it out, which means they're just not very good. Like, I don't know. If they have it in them, they got to show it over like the next 4 days. Otherwise, I don't have to pay attention to them for the rest of the year. So guess which way I'm leaning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to have to pay attention to them. And like the Oakland Athletics are, you know, they're a fun team.
That would require people in the Bay Area to pay attention to the Oakland Athletics. Like, I watch most of their games. I live in the East Bay, used to live in Oakland, now just south of Oakland. Like, love the A's. Love watching the A's. Find them eminently fascinating. I can't write on the A's anymore because I've written A's columns and they just go into the ether for no one to read. And ultimately, as much as it is a masturbatory practice, this columnist life, just writing about whatever the hell you want, this is important. Like, some people have to read it at some point in order for you to maintain your job. So I just don't write on the A's anymore because no one's out there to read it. If people want to start changing that, let me know, because I would love to write on them more. But until then, I have to pretend like the Giants are a competently capable team, or that NFL training camp means anything. What a time to be alive.
I've officially stopped watching the Pirates this year, so I'm like trying to find a new team. The Pirates
the A's
have won,
are real fun. The A's like, are real fun in there.
Yeah, the Pirates have won like four of their last 23 games.
It's, good thing they didn't trade everybody.
Yeah, it's real bad.
What the fuck did they do at the deadline? What the hell was up with that?
The fact that they didn't trade Felipe Vasquez was maddening to me in like, so many ways.
I get not trading Madison Bumgarner, your ace, because you can give him the qualifying offer. And ultimately, you were a game and a half back at the time of the trade deadline. Like, it's not ridiculous to think you can play in game 163. Now it is, but it wasn't then. Like, Felipe Vasquez was useless to the Pirates at the trade deadline. Like, he was just hanging out.
So basically, here's the deal. Felipe Vasquez has 4 years left, including this year on his deal. It's either three more years or four more years. I think it's three more years after this one.
So their assessment is essentially, we'll be good next year.
Right. I don't think they're going to be good next year. I think they're going to be kind of a mess. So
the Pirates never.
Yeah. So I don't get it. Like, relief pitchers only have so much value to teams that aren't good. It's just a totally unrealistic assessment of where the Pirates are in terms of their talent level. So the Dodgers, they apparently asked for one of Gavin Lux or Dustin May and Keibert Ruiz. Realistically, the answer should have just been get Keibert Ruiz, get like maybe two bottom half of the Dodgers, really strong, like top 10 farm system guys, right?
Right.
And just go from there. Like, this is smart.
You're not getting catcher, blocks for them.
Right. Like, catcher is a huge position of need with the Pirates right now. Like, it's a huge position of need. The Dodgers have Will Smith already up. This is just like, to me, it was a no-brainer. Assuming Keibert Ruiz plus like
that.
Yeah, assuming like Keibert Ruiz plus something else was on the table, right?
Yeah.
I don't get what they're doing. It's a mess.
Well, I mean, why start now?
Yeah. No, it's real bad. Let's talk about Rich Paul. So I've been reporting this.
Also bad.
No, Rich Paul's good. Rich Paul's good.
I'm talking about this rule, baby.
Oh, yeah, this rule's a disaster. Which, by the way, right as we've been talking about baseball, the NCAA released a statement, and oh boy.
Why don't you just read that out?
No, let's read the rules first. Okay. So,
let me know what they're just tell me how bad this is.
So the rules are that the NBA Players Association already forces agents to go through an exam, pay dues, etc., to represent players. The NCAA is now coming over top of the National Basketball Players Association and saying that agents need to pass an NCAA test. They need to have a bachelor's degree, and they have to be an NBPA certified agent for at least 3 years so that they can get certified by the NCAA. So, in general, this doesn't affect like a crazy amount of players, right? This affects guys that are like testing their NBA draft stock. The problem with this is that it's exclusionary for no reason. It creates barriers for no reason. The fact that you need a bachelor's degree is just ridiculous on so many levels. Rich Paul obviously is a great example of this, which LeBron James came out on Twitter yesterday and said, dubbed this the Rich Paul rule. I got a copy of the memo. I tweeted it out. Like, it's just a clusterfuck. When you see this, what is your initial response here?
The NCAA is trying to play daddy again because they can't seem to shake that notion that they know what's best, and what's best usually benefits them the most. So they're trying to prevent young men who are testing the waters, not, you know, high-level NBA prospects, fringe prospects, from empowering their own people and you know, going outside of the conventional norm. And the thought from my perspective is that the rules that are put in place makes it more difficult for fringe people to leave the NCAA and stop making the NCAA money. And it is super gross that they keep projecting this notion that they know better, and that they're the adults and you're the children, and the way that we do things is right for you. It's just wholly incorrect, and I think there's a pretty strong racial undercurrent to it, and it's real bad.
I think that was my first initial thought about it. There is a very strong racial undercurrent to it, because most of the people in power within the NCAA institutions, from coaches to athletic directors to people within the NCAA, are white. I think it's 54% of all college basketball players are African-American. Certainly most high-level NBA draft picks, if we're being realistic about it, are African-American. And additionally, agents in general tend to be white. And what this does is it sets up an artificial barrier to entry for more African-American agents. A great example of this, for instance, is Chris Gaston, who is now representing De'Aaron Fox and Damian Dotson. Just started his agency, I believe, in January 2019. It just puts up barriers for people like him who have, just similarly to everyone else who is an agent, most of the time the best intentions at heart. They want to help guys out, make money on their own, start a business on their own. Like, and I know for, you know, like, the young African-American agents also look at it and see, you know, 9 of the 12 agents right now who are representing players and have yearly salaries of over $100 million within their clientele. Right. You know, 9 of the top 12 of those guys are white right now. And I think that the NCAA needs to take a serious look at the fact that it is setting up further barriers for diversity, essentially. By maintaining the status quo, you are creating a circumstance where it is much more difficult to get diversity within the industry of agencies.
I don't disagree with that, but I do think that it implies that the NCAA doesn't know exactly what it's doing. And while
I'll say this, I honestly don't know if they do, but the problem is that I don't think that they did know what they do.
Well, I can't even get into that inception level take, but my thought is this. Like, if you are a 20-year-old and you are testing the waters of the NBA draft and you want to hire somebody who doesn't have these qualifications, excluding the last one, because that's a preposterous poll tax situation that's just clearly, clearly prejudiced.
I'm sorry, which one are you speaking about?
That would be you have to come to Indianapolis and take a test.
Yeah, that's just the dumbest thing in the world.
Like,
honestly... it's the least dumb of the three, too, by the way. It's like it's like the least harmful of the three. So, like, a bachelor's degree is just the most insane thing in the world, because there's no, like, student...
My 4 years at Missouri really set me up for a lifetime of success.
Yeah,
like,
there's
I almost
no
flunked out, like, twice.
But there's no educational program that is realistically... setting you up to be an agent. There are journalism programs. There are communications programs. I mean,
you're telling me, like, that I should have taken sports agency in college?
Yeah, like, my second fucking major was film studies, right? So, like, we have
That's
majors for all of this. It helps me in my hobbies, but not in my real life. We have all of these majors, but, like, for you to come over the top and say, like, oh, you need just some sort of bachelor's degree. What, you think some fucking history degree is going to be out here helping these agents?
University of Phoenix is coming through. University of Southern New Hampshire. That's really where, so you know, that's the school of hard knocks.
Here's the NCAA statement. Although some can and have been successful without a college degree, as a higher education organization, the NCAA values a college education and continues to emphasize the importance of earning a degree. We were guided by recommendations from the Commission on College Basketball, which spoke with the agent and advisor community, that the NCAA certification process should be more stringent than current processes.
Yeah, I bet they
said that. I will guarantee you, that no large-scale look at the agent-slash-advisor community said that the NCAA certification process should be more stringent than the NBPA process.
Oh.
That is either a lack of research on the NCAA's part, because they talked to someone that they knew would say that, or it is a lie. Like, it's one of the two.
No, don't go that far immediately, because let's be real. And this is where the Rich Paul thing comes into play.
But
Rich Paul
I've talked to 20 agents over the course of the last 24 hours. No one thinks this is a good idea. Like, no one thinks that this process should be more stringent than
you're telling
current
me that
processes. Like, I've actually done the work on this.
No. And I'm not alleging that you haven't. And I'm not saying that work is incorrect. What I'm saying is I think it's a lot closer to the first option that you laid out than the last one, which is a lie, which is essentially there's got to be one agent who thinks, well, shit, if you make the qualifications much, much higher, I'll be one of seven people that can actually get these guys. Less competition for me.
Oh, I'm sure that they maybe someone said
they found that dude, and then he was considered the advisor.
Yeah, that might be accurate, but it's bullshit. Like,
no, 100%.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, none of this is even remotely. It doesn't help anyone. The NCAA doing this doesn't help anyone but the NCAA's like front office. Realistically, it doesn't help the kids involved because
Why do you think it helps the NCAA in particular? Other than the suggestion that I threw out, which is it will probably keep more kids in school in a very vicarious manner.
So I don't think it'll do that for what it's worth. I think the opposite might happen. But what I think it does is their goal now for college basketball, I think, is to make sure that the idea of player empowerment does not filter down to college basketball. I think that that's the most important thing that is happening here. I think that the NCAA... I think the NCAA is trying to see what's happening in the NBA, sees what's happening across the basketball industry, sees these AAU programs like Marvin Bagley's Phoenix Family, like 22 Vision, when Romeo Langford was there. Like, you can look up and down the AAU roster. There are programs built around singular kids. And sees that we are entering the era of player empowerment across the basketball industry, except within college basketball. And I think that in many ways, this is the athletic departments and the coaches swinging back at that idea of player empowerment.
Essentially saying, unless you come way above right, you don't get to just have hangers on. You don't get to have, you know, advisors that aren't in a beyond professional capacity. That's what they're saying, that you can't just have an Uncle Dennis situation. You have to have,
which, by the way, Uncle Dennis is done right by Kawhi.
Yeah, and people think Rich Paul is done right by everybody that he has ever represented. Like, right. the notion that one, first of all, here's
a great example of it going the other way than that, right? So Chubby Wells, the guy who was going to represent Zion Williamson, failed his exam to recertify his credentials in January. Yeah. So the NBPA process works to weed out these people that, you know, might be pretenders on some level, right? The NCAA shouldn't be putting a process over the top of that. Like, it's already a process that works. And if you're going to say, oh, well, this is what the NCAA said at the agency seminar in May, because that's when this was announced to the agents, was in May at the NBPA seminar. they said the NCAA pitched it as a way to protect players in light of the FBI investigation into college basketball.
Oh, my God.
Well, guys, the person who caused the investigation into college basketball was Christian Dawkins, who wasn't even certified by the NBPA. Like, none of this matters. None of this is a thing.
Well, it matters. It matters because it's happening, and it's real, and it's stupid. But it's preposterous. I mean, it's on its face obvious what the NCAA is trying to do. And I thought you hit the nail on the head. And I did find the initial clapback on this, which all clapbacks on this are justified. But the initial one, which is it's the Rich Paul rule and Rich Paul has him scared and all that stuff. Maybe that's the case, but it's not about Rich Paul himself. It's about the next Rich Paul. It's about the
exactly what himself. It's exactly what I wrote. 100% agree.
Exactly. And like, but beyond that, like, I don't know. I don't know why you don't want Rich Pauls.
Neither do I.
I don't inherently understand the logical argument of we got to protect you from Rich Paul. From what? Like, also, Rich Paul isn't really going to be hit by this.
No,
like on a personal level.
No, Rich Paul is above this at this stage. He doesn't recruit kids that are testing the waters. Like,
right.
This is not a thing.
And if he decides that Clutch is going to represent one of those kids, like he also employs other people that can represent those kids.
And so like,
can certainly get through that process.
They have another agent, Andy B. Andy Buntianis, I think his name is. That handles their international division. If they really wanted to deal with these guys who test the waters, they could easily send Andy and do this.
Or they could just hire another agent. Like, it's not as if Clutch is hurting for cash. So this will be, as all things NCAA, loopholed around. People will figure out ways to get around it, and nothing will really change. But the NCAA will feel good about itself and feel proper in its righteous indignation towards everybody but them getting money. So
fuck them. The second part of this NCAA statement that was just released is hilarious too. With this in mind, we benchmarked our new rules against requirements for other organizations that certify agents, like the NBPA, which also requires agents to have a bachelor's degree. That's not entirely true, because the NBPA also has like significant easy workarounds if you have work experience at this stage.
Right.
This is stupid. This is really dumb. Like, it's misleading. It's dishonest. It's really fucking stupid.
Also, why is the notion that the NCAA wants anything to do with agents under any parameters is ridiculous. Like, why is the amateur association putting rules in as to quasi-professionalism?
And by the way, this whole structure is not in place for hockey, for baseball agents, for or baseball advisors, I guess they are, and is what they're referred to.
Like, oh, God, don't get into the world of NCAA baseball with me.
Like, none of this is in place for them. And this is, again, where the racial overtones come in, because basketball is obviously the sport here, because they haven't done anything with football yet. Basketball is obviously the sport that features the highest percentage of African-American athletes.
Right.
And
it has the most possible years in which you can leave.
Right.
And so it hasn't been done in football because you have to go 3 years.
To put into place rules that are more stringent toward basketball players is already inherently racially problematic. And I just don't. None of this is smart on the NCAA. They're getting killed for it, rightfully. They're going to continue to get rightfully murdered for it because they decided to double down. This whole organization is so dumb that it astounds me.
Welcome to America, baby.
Yeah. Let's talk about Kevin Durant. So, Chris Haynes, like we said earlier, went and chilled with Kevin Durant for a day. Chris Haynes
is on a heater right now, man.
He's on a heater.
Got the Kawhi news.
Going to hang out with Kevin Durant. The story is hilarious, mostly for the cameos that Haynes interweaves throughout the story. Like, Alonzo Trier is working out and then just comes and hangs out with Kevin Durant, like, on his couch. And then Damian Lillard just randomly calls Kevin Durant and, like, says hello on FaceTime in the middle of their interview. Like, all of this is great, and I love the pageantry behind it all. Within there, I thought Kevin said some interesting things. We've talked at length about Kevin Durant's, the questions over Kevin Durant's injury and how culpable the Warriors were. Kevin put all of that to bed.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, that's a conversation that is over. Kevin Durant said the Warriors were not at fault at all. It was on him.
It wasn't on anybody. It was bad luck. He said shit happens. Exactly. And that's what I wrote after Game 5. Shit happens. Like, the only blame that you can put on the Warriors is that maybe they could have managed his minutes a little bit better. But no one saw this coming. Durant's doctors, the Warriors' doctors, they presumed that the worst that can happen is that a recently healed, if entirely healed, torn muscle in his calf would go, and that the Achilles, the strongest tendon in the body, would not be the thing that would explode should there be another injury. And that makes logical sense via the kinetic chain, but that's not what happened. Shit happens, and it's good that Kevin has put it to bed. I suppose it's good that Kevin doesn't hold any ill will towards the Warriors in this regard. And yeah, I think that it won't happen, because that's not the era we live in, but there need to be some mea culpas, because some people did more than just put the concept out there, put the suggestion out there. Like, some people really, like, took the Warriors to task and claimed, like, downright slanderous shit. And, I'm going to come off as the Warriors homer. That's fine. Like, that was some bullshit, and I think it would be bullshit if it was the same with any other team. If it was the Nets or, you know, the Rockets or whatever. Like, to just slander professionals like that when you don't have all the information and the player himself is not fueling that fire is like, what? Why are you speaking for him in that regard? Kevin would always speak. He just doesn't always do it fast. And I'm glad that this is over before the season starts, because at some point we were going to get bored and we were going to bring this topic up again, and it didn't deserve the light of day in the first place.
Yeah, totally agree. They also discussed the idea of Kevin Durant potentially going to the Knicks because Alonzo was there. Trier, who has been friends with Kevin Durant for a while. Like, that's
what could have been.
Right. That's like been public knowledge.
For sure.
Said that like that was out there the whole year and it wasn't true. And Kevin said he decided on June 30th where he was.
Bullshit. Going. Sorry.
Yeah, I found that a little bit weird. I mean, like, maybe
that's a cool narrative.
Yeah, I'll let you handle that then. Like, why do you think that is bullshit?
He might have decided he was going to the Nets. He might have finalized the decision, but he had one foot out the door the entire damn year. And I don't know necessarily if he knew the full-on destination, but it was very clear, even early in the season, well before the Draymond blow-up, that Kevin was gone. And it only exacerbated as the season went on. And I would like to the Knicks thing wasn't just out of thin air. Now, at some point it might have been, but when you have enough people who know enough people who talk to enough people, like, there were very smart, very trustworthy people who were pushing this in a not here's an idea way, like pushing this as a, this is what Rich Kleiman wants, Kevin seems on board, it's going to happen. Now, we can go back in revisionist history and say, well, they were always talking about New York City proper, with one of the five boroughs of it being Brooklyn. Maybe we can go back and say that. But no, the Knicks and Durant were tied together for very good reason after the Draymond blow up. And
so, yeah, the idea was that, like, Rich Kleiman has always been a Knicks fan. He has the connections with the Knicks front office and ownership.
Rich was going to get one hell of a deal.
Right. Like, I don't know how much I believe. I even said at the time that, like, I don't know how much I buy into all of that. But it was out there. Like, that's unquestionably, like, a thing that exists.
And it wasn't, and again, it wasn't just out there on the notion of, it wouldn't make any damn sense for it to just be out there whimsically. Like, the allure of saving the Knicks was a thing. And ultimately, it was decided by Kevin and perhaps Kyrie as well that allure was not strong enough to go to an organization like that at this moment, and that they could get a lot of the value that they were looking for in being in New York at the other team, which is extremely well run and has a much better roster. And yeah, that's where they decided to go. Now, Kevin also pushed in this article that he and Kyrie were not planning on playing together. It just worked out that way. Sure, I'll believe that. Okay. I don't, but I can pretend to.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's...
Like, when did it work out that way? The All-Star game? Yeah.
I think it was probably after that, to be honest. I really do. I believe
it doesn't really matter. Like, that's the ultimate.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, it doesn't matter. Like,
no one with the Warriors is, like, angry about this.
Right.
Like, they got over it, like, in, like, 10 minutes. Because ultimately, had Kevin kind of done the same shit that he had done last year, which is sign another one-year deal or something, and then come back, or you know, two-year deal or whatever, it got so toxic that it just, everyone agreed that it was kind of over. And they made the push, and they wanted him back and all this stuff, but, like, there was a level of relief that kind of all that drama and bullshit was gone. Now, also gone with it is being the NBA favorites, and that is a very good place to be, even though heavy is the head that lies the crown. But there was some refreshment to not having Kevin Durant and all of what happened the past year around anymore.
Yeah. Where do we think? We kind of talked a little bit about the Warriors last week, just in regard to, like, the Draymond Green thing. But, you know, the Warriors right now, in terms of their odds to make the playoffs, they're at -350 on BetOnline.
Okay.
They're over under win total right now is 47.5.
Okay.
I think those numbers are remarkably low. Like, I cannot believe that they are that low.
Okay. I'm in on that logic.
I am going to hammer that over.
How are you going to do that, Sam?
I am going to go to betonline.ag and hammer that over. BetOnline is just the best place to bet. Look, you've got baseball season in full swing. You've got NFL preseason. I bet on the Hall of Fame game last week.
Did you bet the under?
I did bet the under. Shout out Robbie Callen in the podcast, baby.
He came through. He was pushing that under hard. I got even to the point where, had I been more online at that moment, had I seen the tweet at the right time, I might have logged on to betonline.ag and maybe placed a wager in the same realm and really cashed in after that one.
Yeah, it's easy. It's easy as hell. Go to BetOnline.ag to celebrate the NFL preseason's kickoff. CLNS Media and BetOnline are giving you a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. If you go over to BetOnline.ag, use that promo code CLNS50 to receive your welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines this football season. Get into the action with BetOnline.ag, your online sports books. A minimum deposit of $55 is required to qualify for the bonus.
You're not a pansy, though. You're going to put in more than 55.
Yeah, please just go to betonline.ag. See BetOnline's general rules for additional terms and conditions regarding bonuses. But, yeah, man, like, I'm excited to hammer this Warriors over because I think that they're actually legitimately good.
I don't disagree with you. The way I've been putting it to people is that I think that their ceiling is much higher than people give them credit for, on the notion that most people look at it and they're no longer the juggernaut force. They're no longer the far and away best team in the NBA talent-wise. And because they're not at that level anymore, people presume that they are mediocre. That's not the case. They were so high that when they fell down, they still landed amongst the best teams in the NBA. And I think with Steph Curry and Draymond Green and I think some interesting talent around him. I think Steve Kerr is a much better coach than maybe he gets credit for. Some people give him a lot of credit, but I think the general consensus is that he just had a lot and made it work or not, as we saw in the NBA Finals. I think that their ceiling is very high. I think that they can absolutely host a first-round playoff series, if not a second-round playoff series, in the Western Conference playoffs should Steph and Draymond play 70-plus games each. At the same time, I also think that the floor is really low, like almost tankable low because of...
No.
You really don't think that?
No, they have fucking Stephen Curry. Like,
if Stephen... But what if they do not have Stephen Curry?
Yeah. I mean, if they lose Steph, like, yeah, that's an issue.
All bets are off, except at BetOnline.ag, in which case you will still have to pay.
Yes. If Stephen Curry gets hurt, like, that's one thing. But
this is my point. Like, like most other teams in the NBA, the Warriors do not have a massive margin for error anymore, particularly when you look at if it was Klay and Draymond, we can have the conversation, but you don't have Klay, and you probably won't have 100% Klay, maybe at any point, but probably until the playoffs themselves. And Draymond, for all of his positives, is not going to be gunning for Defensive Player of the Year after he signed his contract extension. He's going to play it smart. He wants to get into...
I think that he is going to have to play pretty hard, though.
Mm. He'll have to play hard, but it will not be balls to the wall, sir.
I think it's going to...
He's not going to treat the 82-game regular season like it's a playoff game. That man knows how to differentiate the two far too well.
But, like, you can play, like, at 85% and still be, like... pretty good.
And he'll be excellent. He doesn't score you 20 points a game, though.
No. Like, he's not going to drop 20.
And this is where the Warriors' issue will be.
To expend energy is the defense, because they are going to need, like, someone to defend, because you lose Klay Thompson, you lose Kevin Durant, there's just less of a backup plan there. Now, I'm fascinated by Willie Cauley-Stein in the Bay. Like, I'll just say that. Yep. Like, I think there's a real chance that that works out really well. I would imagine that he probably starts next to Dre, right?
Yes. Yeah. Like that. That's an accurate assessment. And then they bring Looney off the bench as per usual.
Right. So, like, I think that they have a chance to actually be okay on defense, especially after Klay gets back, because I think that Clay just being who he is. The fact that he's already walking without a goddamn limp is insane. But that dude is, like you said, Wolverine. I think he's going to be back like pretty darn near after the All-Star break.
What we haven't taken into account yet, and this is my error more than yours, is the fact that D'Angelo Russell is actually on this basketball team. And that creates... It does create secondary scoring, but what it more than anything else, it is going to have to create a bit of a shift change for the Warriors in their primary on-ball actions. They're going to have to be a lot more pick-and-roll heavy, and that could unlock things that maybe we haven't seen by design over the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, yeah, they typically only have two guys that can run the pick-and-roll on the court at once with Steph and Dre.
And
Clay can't really do it.
Correct. But they did not run nearly enough like Kevin Durant, Steph Curry pick and roll. And when they just didn't run it. Like Steve Kerr just constantly saved it for the nuclear option. It was like he held back because he wanted to use it in circumstances in the playoffs where he could run it. They did this against the Nets in the regular season last year. They ran it like 5 straight plays and just came back and won. They were down by like 7 in the final like 90 seconds.
Right. And let me be clear here. Whenever I say that, like, you know, they didn't have as many pick and roll options. Like, obviously Kevin Durant can run the pick and roll, but like they just didn't utilize it.
They just didn't do it. But they don't really have that luxury anymore because D'Angelo Russell is a top flight pick and roll player. And yes, you can try to work him into the motion offense, and they will do plenty of that. And he will do the quasi Clay role. And trust me, they're going to stagger Steph and D'Angelo plenty. It's going to be really interesting. But I would imagine that with Willie Cauley-Stein, a great rim runner, and with Russell on the team now, you're going to have to do just more straight line pick and roll stuff. There could be a little bit of grinding of the gears there as they figure that out. Now, it's not exactly the most complicated offense in the world, but it is different than the identity. They have so many people changing over. I'm interested to see how Steve Kerr actually coaches up this year. Again, the ceiling is extremely high for this team. I don't think that they get enough credit, but there is a real danger zone. I think the thing that I'm looking forward to seeing most is if they can turn D'Angelo Russell into an average NBA defender, because I think he has the frame to be a pretty interesting on-ball guy as a one or a two. He has a massive wingspan, but he just doesn't, it's just not caked in. Like, it's not built in yet. Can the Warriors in a short period of time convince him to play dogged defense and teach him enough of the fundamentals of that, of playing defense, that he can go out there and be salvageable? Because if he isn't, the Warriors are going to have a drop off on offense. That's given when you lose Kevin Durant, and I think a massive drop off on defense. And that's really where the problems will start, particularly in the postseason.
Yeah, in the postseason, I'm a little bit worried, but I'm not as worried in the.
Let's see if they get there first, because there's no guarantee that they make the postseason.
I feel pretty good about them making the playoffs.
No. I feel good about it too. Don't get me wrong. I think that's a very good line from BetOnline.ag. But like.
Yeah, I'm gonna
again.
Yeah.
There's a floor, and it's not very high.
I mean, let's say they even lose Steph, they still have D'Angelo Russell and Dre. I mean,
in the West,
I get that. That's still at least 40, I think.
Really?
I do.
Wow. I thought I was the most optimistic person in the Bay, but you're not in the Bay. But you're killing
me
on
for
this.
It. I'm here for being optimistic about the Warriors. They're so good. Like, the culture is so good. They still have Stephen Curry. Still have Draymond Green.
At least Kevin Durant confirmed that the culture was so good today. Otherwise, we would have just said, terrible organization.
Oh, my God. So I want to talk about Kemba Walker real quick. I don't know why. Okay. I want to do this. We've talked about him a little
bit masochist.
Already. But, so I reported, like a month ago or something, whenever I wrote my, like, big thing on Charlotte, that they offered him like around 160. I think like the number I got told was like 160, 165. Shams had it at like slightly less than 160. I think Rick Bonnell had it maybe at like under 170 or something like that. Like, we're all in the same ballpark.
There was a ballpark, yeah.
Yeah. And Shams today, you know, had this Q&A/feature story with Kemba Walker. And I just continue to be so alarmed by how stupid Charlotte is. To not trade Kemba Walker at the deadline or to not offer him more money per year than the Celtics did. None of this really makes sense. And the reason that it's important, I think, is because Kemba Walker obviously is playing on Team USA at the tournament that nobody cares about. That's trademarked now. It's the tournament that nobody cares about. Like, even Canada isn't taking it seriously, given the fact that Jamal Murray and Andrew Wiggins and, like, all these people are sitting out.
Shameful.
Like, it's just... It continues to be baffling to me that the Hornets can be this bad at this.
Yes,
they were in the seventh seed. I get that, but they had a losing record at the time. Why would you? What is the case for not dealing Kemba Walker at the deadline if you're not going to offer him at least, let's say, $175 million?
There's none. It doesn't make any damn sense. It's terrible planning. It's no self awareness. I don't understand him at all.
So. We'll talk about, like, his deal with the Celtics here in a minute. But, like, I'm just, like, struggling to see where the Hornets go from here now. Like, obviously, they will exist. Like, I'm not saying that they're going to, like, lose the franchise. But, like, their highest upside player is probably Miles Bridges, who I think is, like, solid starter. We don't know if Terry Rozier is going to be a starter. Nick Batum is probably overpaid by $15 million now.
Bismack Biyombo. That one got rough.
Bismack is probably overpaid by, I would say, $13 million, $14 million. That's only a one-year deal, though. Marvin Williams is only overpaid by, like, seven or so.
We're getting better.
Cody Zeller, another center, by the way, who plays the same position as Bismack Biyombo. They have $31.5 million tied up in Bismack Biyombo and Cody Zeller, by the way.
Well, at least it's bringing plenty of fruit.
Yeah. They have $13 million tied up in Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who might not be able to play basketball, like, at a high level for anyone, really. I just don't know. This is like a total page one rewrite outside of Miles Bridges and maybe PJ Washington and maybe Malik Monk. And
yes,
for a team that hasn't been good in so long, like, that has to just be incredibly disheartening. And, like, I think it all just stems from the fact that, like, Michael Jordan hires people that he knows. Like, he hires North Carolina alum Mitch Kupchak. He hires his roommate at North Carolina, Buzz Peterson. And, like, he, I don't know how much he meddles in the front office stuff, like, you know, I've heard differing things, but, like, it's just not a good situation, I feel like.
I agree. It's it just seems like amateur hour, and that's bad. Like,
it does.
There's not that many teams in the NBA that you can still claim that about anymore, but god damn it, they're holding down the fort.
Like, I don't think that this is as bad as the Knicks in terms of, like, ownership and, like, front office stuff, but, like, it's bad, man.
It's not good. And I don't see a way back. I mean, other than
they have to draft well. Like, they have to just hit in the draft now. That's it.
And then not pay that guy. I understand some logic in not wanting to give Kemba Walker the full. He was supermax eligible. No.
Yeah, honestly, like, I understand not wanting to give Kemba, like, say he was still just like a 30% max guy. I understand not wanting to pay him 5 years, $190 million. I genuinely totally get that.
100%.
My problem is that if you know you're not going to pay him, why are you not dealing him at the deadline? You could have gotten multiple first-round picks from, okay, let's say Philadelphia. Like, he's a legit difference maker for Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. We know what they paid to get a legit difference maker on a expiring deal, because they paid Landry Shamet two first round picks, and who else? There was one more guy that they sent across. Might have been Wilson Chandler, but, like, the three important pieces were Landry Shamet and two first round picks. Like, that is a legit starter and two first round picks to put into your cash long term. You could have then turned around, dealt one of those first round picks along with Nick Batum to a team like Cleveland. Got off of an extra year Nick Batum's contract and started your rebuild a year early. Now you're stuck, basically, for this year. You do have, you know, reasonable cap space next year, but like you're not cap liquid until the summer of 2021, and that's not a good position to be in.
But what does it matter? Like no one's.
Well, I think being cap liquid is important just for trades as well as free agency.
Valid. Yeah, you want as many options as possible, but still, like, no one's signing with Charlotte unless you're going to significantly overpay them. Which like I guess they've got that into their system. The Terry Rozier thing even made it worse, right? Like, if you're not going to pay Kemba Walker more than what any other team can offer him, and therefore making it worth his while to stay, you trade him, but then you don't go out and overpay a lesser point guard on like what? How much are they paying Rozier?
It's $359 million, so like $19 million a year. The plus side, it is a declining deal in terms of value. So Terry is making about $20 million this year.
It's important stuff. I mean, I don't know how you're supposed to sell season tickets for that team.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's tough.
And I think they're a team that already loses a fairly significant amount of money.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's bad.
What do we think Kemba Walker looks like with the Celtics, by the way?
I think he looks like I'm going back to this analogy, lower ceiling, but not tremendously lower ceiling, generally higher floor in all walks, Kemba Walker. Or I'm sorry, Kyrie Irving.
Isaiah Thomas.
No, because I don't know if there's a direct comp. The other thing too is without Al Horford, a lot of that team changes fairly significantly. I think that at point guard they're going to be steady. I don't think they lose all that much at point guard, to be totally honest. But when you don't have Horford there, that really does change up a lot of the lineups that you can put on the floor. So I feel like that's a bigger issue for the Celtics.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think losing Horford is a huge deal for them. They're probably going to take a step back this year. I mean, maybe it's not as bad of a step back just because, chemistry seemed to be a disaster there last year. Maybe better chemistry leads to better
and
wins.
Everyone likes Kemba. I mean, Kemba's a nice guy.
Yeah, and like, you know, him and Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, these guys all certainly seem to be a core worth building around. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the French center that they got, Vincent Poirier.
You're telling me.
Yeah, I think he's like solid. I think he's going to be a rotation player. They go out and they get Grant Williams. They get Carson Edwards, two more like really, really good culture guys. Like this is a team worth rooting for now, at least in a way that like.
Yeah, I can get behind that. It all comes down to the same thing, though. I mean, can Tatum and Brown make the leap?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, people will have different opinions on that. I certainly am not sure whether or not.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Jaylen will. I think Jason will, but I don't know if Jaylen will. We'll see. Basically, I think that's where we're at. The last thing I want to talk about is this memo that the NBA issued to all 30 teams on Wednesday, detailing changes that'll be required before the start of the 2019-20 season in regard to mental health. According to the memo, which was obtained by The Athletic's Sam Amick, teams are now expected to retain and make available to players on a voluntary basis one or two mental health professionals who are licensed in their field and locality and with experience in assessing and treating clinical mental health issues. They have to identify a licensed psychiatrist to be available to assist in engaging player health mental issues. They have to enact a written action plan for mental health emergencies, put in place procedures for communicating to players and team staff, the team's practices with respect to privacy and confidentiality, and attend a September 12th health and wellness meeting in Chicago where these matters will be discussed and analyzed even further. I love this. Like, I think it's great. I think it's a credit to guys like Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan that have really spoken out about these issues over the years. It's all fantastic, I think. Like, the more that sports teams can make strides in this field, I think the better it will be for the general sports community.
Yeah, mental health is a is a very important issue, and anything that teams can do to provide help if asked is good. Having that resource available is a positive. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. That said, there needs to be some agency with players there too, that, you know, you don't have to necessarily just go with who the team gives you. You can have outside mental health counsel. My hope is that by providing it in a general and very open sense, that the NBA helps further destigmatize asking for help with your mental health around the league, and that it no longer becomes unspoken or taboo, that you can feel comfortable saying that, yeah, you saw somebody for something you were working through, whether that be team approved, team paid, or somebody on the outside. And that really is, I would hope, the goal of this program that the NBA is putting in, that mental health is important and we're trying to destigmatize it. And the way we're going to destigmatize it is we're going to very publicly legitimize it inside of our own organizations and promote it as a resource available to all players and you know, front office people and such.
Well, there's that. And I think that, you know, just being in sports, obviously, it's a very testosterone-filled, male-dominated, confidence-based industry.
For sure.
And I think that opening up more avenues to players that may feel like they have not been engaged in that way before, I think is much, much more important.
There's nothing soft about it.
Yeah, like even in other industries, I think it's more important than sports-based industry than it is even in other industries, just because these guys aren't brought up to talk about this stuff. So I think it's incredibly valuable to have it.
I'm a major proponent of getting mental health help. I think that it can go a very long way, and hopefully anyone who needs it can get it now. And then, so it's a good thing. But as you pointed out before we came on the air, you are curious as to how many teams already had this in place beforehand. And, you know, my hope is that this isn't going to be too difficult for anybody, that they were already hedging this way. And this is sort of just a official mandate of something that's already unofficially been happening.
Yeah, totally agree. I would hope that most teams already have some sort of mental health, professionals in the building already. Yeah. And like Dieter said, I think that it'd be great if this is happening league-wide. All right, so we're going to get to a couple of fun things. Did you get involved in the Feral Dogs meme?
The Feral Hogs.
Feral Hogs? Sorry, I said
I
Feral
didn't.
Dogs.
I did.
I'm very
I did.
Ill.
Okay, so I didn't, but I fully understand what you're talking about, and I was very much online for the entire thing. For those who don't know, the artist Jason Isbell said, I get that wrong?
No, it's Jason Isbell. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
100%. Again, like clearing my throat because I am ill.
Anytime I pronounce last names, I'm so defensive that I'm immediately just like, no, I didn't fuck that up. Jason Isbell, formerly of the Drive-By Truckers. So I figured I had that one on lock as a big Truckers fan.
I will say this. I've never heard a Jason Isbell song.
Oh, well, you haven't spent a lot of time with college football writers in the South, because God damn it, do they love him like people in the Northeast love Bruce Springsteen. And I was an OG Isbell guy just because I'm a big Truckers guy. And it's been a rough going for us OGs. Nevertheless, he is very much online and pithy with his tweets. And you know, he's a Democrat in the South, so he's a fun novelty to stare at on the Twitter zoo. And he made a comment following yet another mass shooting in this country that, you know, no one should have semi-automatic weapons. And there was a response from a man in rural Arkansas. What happens when my children are playing outside and 30 to 50 feral hogs come into my backyard? Which is, okay, and so most people laugh at that, because it is a preposterous concept. It is, in fact,
one part of it is the way it's framed too.
Yes, but what about this? Like, it's the ultimate whataboutism. Like, what if 30 to 50 feral hogs?
Legit question for rural Americans.
It is.
How do I kill the 30 to 50 feral hogs that run into my yard within 3 to 5 minutes while my small kids play? Because, like, the syntax is also a little bit fucked up because he's acting like he has to kill the feral hogs.
This is a constant. Well, yes, here's the thing.
In front of his small children.
Okay, I've been to school in Missouri. I have hunted feral hogs. Those motherfuckers... All they do is
fuck. Of course,
fuck
you hunted feral hogs.
All they do is fuck and ruin shit. Like, feral hogs are a legitimate problem, and so I stayed offline because ultimately, I do believe that feral hogs are a legitimate problem. And the more I thought about it, like, I am extremely anti-gun, and that's for a variety of reasons we won't get into here. Personal reasons beyond just
build a fence.
Well, it's one. It's property. So the fact that the guy used the term yard when clearly what he meant was my several acre property,
right.
Is there like two. Yeah. You could build a fucking fence. You would think that this guy would, you know, have thought to build a wall. He's only heard it so many times at rallies. It was the funny thing to me was one, like, it's a legitimate question under completely ridiculous circumstances. Like, that cannot be your one out for why people should have semi-automatic weapons in the United States. And two, it was really interesting looking at people constantly telling on themselves that they have never been south of Washington, D.C. and never been west of Philadelphia. Like, that they've never actually been to the Midwest. And we see this all the time with, like, Politico tweets and stuff where they're just, they go to the Midwest and they, like, gaze upon the locals as if they're, you know,
yeah,
a species.
The classic New York Times.
100%.
And talk to six voters in Iowa.
Yeah,
this, like, is what they're thinking.
Like, the headline might as well have been, like, man from Arkansas tweets, and then, like, a round of applause from the Northeast liberal elites. Like, anyone who took 10 fucking minutes to just do basic research would understand that there's, like, a legitimate feral hog problem in the United States, and that they suck.
Look,
they fucking suck.
You're not taking away the feral hog meme from me, because this guy is out here acting like, this is, like, the fourth time. He literally said, like, this has happened to me four times.
Yeah.
So, do we think his body count of feral hogs is just, like, astronomical?
I don't think he's a very good shot, is my general consensus. Beyond that, here's the other problem. And I talked to some people about this. I did my research. I did my work on this.
Do we think he's barbecuing the feral hogs after he murders them in cold blood?
The issue is that you shouldn't kill the feral hogs, because then they will scatter. If you shoot at a feral hog, they scatter, and then they create their own separate cliques, and then they will procreate like nobody's business. They can push out 30 piglets a year. So by killing them, it actually only exacerbates the problem. And this is another issue with gun control in America. If people stop shooting the fucking feral hogs and instead started trapping them, we would not have as much of a feral hog problem. But because people can now, they have a good excuse to use semi-automatic weapons and can kill a shit ton of feral hogs, it exacerbates the feral hog problem. That's my research on the matter.
Oh my god, I can't handle this.
This is what I do with my spare time.
The other funny thing that happened this weekend was, so there's this movie coming out. If you've been to the movie theaters in the last like 2 months, I'm sure you've seen a preview for it.
Watch television.
Yeah, see, but I don't have cable like you do, so I don't know how much this is on.
I got YouTube TV. I mean, okay, I'm not like some like weird, you know, I don't have like Spectrum like a weirdo.
So there's this movie coming out called Good Boys. It stars the kid from Room, two other kids that are like
Bill Hilter for him.
What, like 10? Like, these kids are like 10 or 12, something like that.
Well, no, they're
right?
All 23 years old but look like they're 11.
No, they're definitely young. No, they're definitely like
This is a classic shtick. Let's watch a bunch of 11 and 12 year olds swear. It's basically a Facebook.
Right.
It's like a Facebook video your aunt shares in movie form.
So like, I'll be honest with you. Like, I'm not super interested in this movie.
I'm not super interested either. I'll see it for like $5 on a Tuesday afternoon if I got nothing else to do. But that's probably not happening.
But the level to which the internet is angry about this movie existing is incredible.
The internet angry?
It is so angry.
Don't they have feral hogs to kill?
This movie is an atrocity. The Lord is not pleased. Everyone behind the making of it must repent. Let's see.
Do you think that these are fake?
It's crap like this that makes unbalanced minds into mass shooters. Seth Rogen will have to explain this one day when he stands before the throne on Judgment Day. These are all comments on a trailer for this movie.
The virtue must be signaled, Sam. The virtue must be signaled.
This is a joke, right? Rated R? Take this crap back to the drawing board. We want our boys to be boys. Definitely not like this. Who exactly is your target audience here? No parent in their right mind would allow their kids to watch this. And anyone older than 18 would see this as just a kid's movie. No, like, very clearly, given the fact that it's an R-rated movie, the target audience is not kids. I was shocked to see advertisements for this movie not once, not twice, but three times during a baseball game. How is this appropriate? A rated R movie glorifying these pubescent males' unacceptable behavior toward females. Who thought this was a good idea? Disgraceful.
My new favorite thing is seeing what... So I'm a night owl, as you well know. And my new favorite thing is seeing what starts trending at like 1 o'clock in the morning here on the
West
Coast.
This was trending on like Saturday, I think.
No, I think it's all authentic, but it might not be. Because at about 1 o'clock in the morning, which just so happens, I believe, whatever 9 a.m. Moscow time is, some weird political stuff just starts trending. And I really enjoy going through the new trending thing and just seeing how sophisticated these Russian bots have gotten. And I'm just saying that I can't rule out the fact that that they're really sophisticated and that good boys might be on the other end of their sophistication these days.
Saw the trailer in the theater and was shocked. The parents of these young actors obviously felt the money and fame of being in this movie was more important than their kids' well-being. Sad to see how little we care anymore about protecting our kids from trash and sexualization. I love this.
Well, what's
the internet is so mad about this.
Yeah, and it's really, yeah. I just love that. Like, we got to protect our kids from all of this crap. Like, can you remember when you were like 11? Like,
why are you commenting on this? Who are the people that
these people
so
are
angry
again
online that they have to comment about this?
This
to
is
a movie that already exists and already has a wide release.
this is again the Facebook video that your aunt posted, and these are all of her friends posting afterwards.
Man, what a smart decision on my part to leave Facebook.
Oh yeah, me too. I deleted everything on the way out. You will not find me.
The only thing that I have is the good old Instagram.
Along I deleted with Instagram off of my phone. I was wasting a lot of time. Now, mind you, I really only followed golf instruction videos, but
you are so Caucasian.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm gonna own who I am, sir. And
I love this.
I was spending a lot of time, and it was also kind of messing my head up because I was getting several different opinions on very simple things that I thought I was once doing correctly. And I don't know how your mornings start, Sam, but I'll tell you, I usually pick up my phone and check my emails real fast, see what the push notifications are, if any news happened, and then I go
not
on
how
Twitter.
My morning starts, for what it's worth. I'll explain.
What do you
after.
Do?
Continue. No, continue
well,
on your end first.
There have been times in my life where I'll wake up at, you know, I'm a night owl, and most of the time I have my shit together so that I can sleep in a little bit, and I'll get up at like 9:30, 10, not very frequently anymore, but back in the day, and oh shit, I'd just stay in bed for 2-3 hours just on my phone. And that's bad and really can't happen anymore now that I'm theoretically an adult. So, yeah, I had to get rid of the gram. And I wasn't really posting on it anyway. So who the fuck cares?
So I don't leave my phone in my bedroom anymore.
Yeah, it's hard. It's
because
hard
of that.
I totally get it. But as someone who has to opine on breaking news, like the Draymond thing happened and I had my phone off like entirely off, because my plan was I'm going to sleep in. And sometimes I'll wake up at, you know, like 6:37, and you need 5-10 minutes to kind of get back to sleep, get that nice second sleep in, and you'll check your phone real fast and just make sure nothing crazy's happened. And, you know, you're just kind of in those moments. So I had it off. Like, I'm not going to check it. And if I wake up on that, I'm just going to try to get right into second sleep as fast as possible. And then I check my phone, and it's just like text messages. Shit was outrageous. And I was easily 45 an hour late to something that on normal days I would have just kind of had readily available. So I don't like leaving it in the other room because of the baseline of the job.
Yeah, I get that. I guess we do have like somewhat different jobs in that way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not called upon to opine on things unless I really care about them.
Yeah, I mean, there is a speed element to the game I play. And I would like to be on top of it while not also being addicted to checking my phone, which we're working on.
Yeah, my fiance really helped me with that. I will say that. She
What was the biggest vice? What was the biggest issue? You were just checking Twitter all the time?
Oh yeah, it's Twitter. Like, I'm a news junkie. I need to, like, I need to be connected at all times. I need to know what's happening, like X, Y, and Z at all times.
I got over that.
I'm getting over it. Like, it's not bad anymore.
I unfollowed a shit ton of people, and I know that might not be something that you're capable of doing, given your theoretical follower count. I only follow 666 people now, and that will be the number forever, just as a joke. But it's a pretty weeded down thing, and like, a lot of them are just people that I know personally and am friends with, and kind of don't have the gall to say that whatever you're saying on Twitter is not important to me. But there's a lot of those people, and I mute probably a good 100 of them. Just, I'm not going to tell you who, but a good 100 of them, I never see them. So I just don't have as much to take in. And so if I don't check my phone for an hour 30 on Twitter, I don't really miss anything.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'm doing better at that. I'm playing video games a little bit more. That helps.
What are you playing right now?
Oh, the show. Like, constantly.
You're still rocking the show. Is this how you're going to get over your pirate sadness?
Yeah. I am in the middle of a 162 game season with the Pirates right now, and I am deep in the midst of a wild card chase.
I'm getting my ass kicked in the first round, so I was able to improbably get the White Sox to the playoffs, and it is not going great.
Good
the
Lord.
The Astros are very, very good.
Yeah, they are. Dieter, tell the people what's going on in your life. Tell the people where they can find your work.
You can find me on Twitter. So happy to say this. At Dieter, D-I-E-T-E-R. And the San Jose Mercury News and the East Bay Times. They still pay me to write columns, and maybe some stuff coming down the pipeline. We'll see with that. But at Dieter is the home for all of this stuff. There can only be one Dieter, and it is I.
I love that. I am now officially like 17 days out from my wedding, so I'm gonna be recording.
Yeah, this motherfucker is sneaking up on us. Yeah, I have not dropped the requisite weight,
so like, I am gonna be recording some podcasts ahead of time with Dieter, with Cole. They don't know this yet, but there will be some times where I have to just record some stuff for the 2 weeks that I'm like totally out of commission.
We should record at your wedding.
We should not record at my wedding. My fiance would literally break up with me.
Sam, I have the equipment. 5 minutes. Sam and Dieter, thrash drunk, making it happen, talking about basketball.
I will not be thrash drunk at my wedding. Everyone else will be. I will not be.
Oh, I don't know. What have you already chosen? Like, what's the bar situation?
Oh, what do you mean? It's open bar. Like,
what kind of stuff are you gonna have?
So we are actually trying to figure that out. I have an email right now from my soon to be father-in-law discussing what beers we have. Do you have suggestions? I guess is the question.
Well, okay. So here's the thing. I'm trying. I have a wedding in 11 months now, and listen, the IPAs just have to go until I am a beautiful 44 triple X long suit again, and that's a while away. So
no IPAs. We can do that.
No, yeah, like, yeah, just make sure you have, I don't know.
So there will be
8 to 12 light beer. Listen, man, I'm pounding Michelob Ultras. I'm pounding Trulies. Those are good by me. You got 8 to 12 for me in that regard. I'll be long gone for you.
So we definitely will have the Kona Big Wave Golden Ale there.
It's a delightful beer, but one I cannot consume at this time.
It's not that bad. It's pretty light.
It's all about the carb count, baby.
Okay. So we've got...
Yeah, sorry.
What do you want? I mean, do you want like a Rolling Rock? Do you want like a Bud Light? Like what are we talking?
Okay, well, listen, we can go over a lot of the details here elsewhere, but there are some wonderful selections of beers that have under 4 carbs a can, 4 carbs to 12 ounces going on right now. You have the Lagunitas Daytime. You have the Dogfish Head. I think it's called the Lo-Fi Lager. I'm a big fan of a Michelob Ultra with a little bit of salt, maybe a lime. Corona Premier tastes like shit, but listen, I've done worse. But, you know, push comes to shove, a Busch or a Miller Lite's going to get the job done for me.
There you go. All right. This is good to know. This is important information.
I can talk for another 3.5 hours about cheap beer, baby.
The last thing that we have to do here is read a review from the podcast. The podcast community just continues to leave us sterling reviews. And I appreciate it so, so much. Let's see what we've got here. All right, let's go with
Eric. Did you knock that any of these before?
Oh no, let's go with
Jesus. No,
let's go with Eric Jr.'s normal sized collar, which is a tremendous Philadelphia based name.
Oh, find a new slant.
Rename the pod, please. Hey Sam, I love everything about the pod except for one thing: the name. Full disclosure, I mean this in the nicest way possible, so please don't read it with the typical 2019 smart-ass internet voice. Here's my beef. The podcast should be called Sam Vecini with Cole Zwicker, but maybe it's Dieter Kurtenbach. Actually, no, it's Cole Zwicker. Keep up the great work, no matter who you have on. Just kidding, we know who it's going to be, Justin. Shout out to you, Justin. That is well done, beautiful, sir. I appreciate you. I appreciate everyone that leaves reviews on the podcast. Please go leave us a rating and review. 5-star ratings. If you leave us a review, we will make sure and read it on the podcast if it's a really good one.
That was a really good one. I felt really it started slow, but boy, did it hit hard at the end.
It built up. I'm proud of that one. All right. Until next time, though, we'll talk soon. Bye.